I said, well, Pastor, you're not going to talk about the enemy. And then he said, well, let me tell you the enemies of God. I said, oh, no, stop. I said, stop, Pastor, stop. But Pastor just kept going. I said, well, maybe God will direct him in another way. But y'all know how God is. He wasn't directing him in another way. He was directing me in another way. So I thank him for that. So I'm not going to talk about what Pastor done already covered, but in a sense, it's in correlation. We're going to talk about the enemy or the inner me. The enemy or the inner me. And I like that picture he put up on the wall. You know, Brent can handle some stuff when you don't know what to do. He put up. And you got to look at that and see, now, which one is the enemy and which one is the inner me? Now, we're going to be coming from the book of Mark. And Mark was a peculiar writer that when you read up on his information, most of his information he got was from Peter. And after Peter died, then about 67, 68 AD, he began to write, and he wrote the things that Peter had told him. And if you read in, if you compare the two Gospels, Matthew and Mark, they're very similar. Except Mark was a little more aggressive. Mark wanted to make his point a little clearer, and some of the passages we're going to read, you're going to see that. But we start in chapter 7. And keep that in mind. We're going to talk about the enemy or the inner me. In the Old Testament, they describe the enemy as to show hostility towards someone. It indicates an adversary, someone or something you hate. You know, like the Amorites and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Philistines. God always told them to do one thing. He said, when he go attack them, he said, wipe them out. Take them all out. And every time, they never done it. They always left a remnant, left something there. They didn't obey. And when we look at that word enemy, it's the same word, but in the New Testament describes it a different way. Some of the same words it says, it shows hostility and hatred, a negative attitude toward love and friendship. The New Testament focuses on the attitude and source from which the hostile acts flow. It is the origin of the source rather than the acts themselves that are focused on. It deals with the origin of the source rather than the act themselves. And he wants us to focus. Don't focus on what somebody did. Focus on where it came from. Now, how many of us in here would say, when stuff starts going bad, you know, we say, you know what, the devil fight me. Or the devil against me again. The devil, he's busy. And, you know, I said it too. I'm guilty. I said, oh, man, the devil. And then I started reading. When I got this, I started reading. I said, well, you know what? I'm going to list all the times where the Bible said it was Satan that done it. And I looked. And I looked. And I looked. I said, well, I know somewhere they got that. But when you read it, you say, why do we do that? Why do we say it's Satan? Because we don't want to say it's us. We don't want to say it's us. So when I started looking at this lesson, I started with chapter 7. I looked at verse 1, and I'm just going to walk through it. It was the Pharisees and the scribes. They came in, and they saw Jesus' disciples. They was eating, and they didn't wash their hands. And he said, oh, we got him now. So they followed Jesus all the time to trip him up, to find fault in him. And when they saw this, so they, you know the story. They came, well, Jesus, your disciples ate, and you know, they didn't wash their hand. You know, they defiled. So Jesus being who he is, he started to rebuke him. And he went so far as to tell him, you know, because you know the Pharisees and the scribes, they know all the laws and all the commandments. So Jesus went with the one, he said, you don't even keep the one that say honor your father and mother. The only reason you do it is if the parents have something that you can receive from. And those Pharisees, you know, they looked at him. And when you read the story, it's like, oh, man, I know he didn't go that way. But that's what they, if the parents didn't have nothing, they wasn't taking care of him. So when Jesus told them that, and I read the story, it's like they walked off. And then we come to verse 14. That was 1 through 13. When you get to verse 14, look what it says. It says, and when he had called all the people unto him, he said unto them, hearken unto me, every one of you, and understand. Now, when you read that, the Pharisees gone, the scribes gone, and Jesus, he didn't just start speaking. He called them. As if there was inner group standing off aside, and he said, come here. Y'all gather around, I got something to tell you. And when you read the text, it's in the imperative form, meaning it wasn't a suggestion, it was a command. Y'all come here, I got something to tell you, and I'm not just gonna tell it to you, I don't want you just to hear it, but make sure you understand. Now we come to church Tuesdays and Sundays and do all things, and Pastor says something that stuck with me last time it's up. He said, we pick and choose what we want from what he said. And I said, we pick and choose. And he, the things that I tell you about children, and he used the example about children. We, you know, I'm going to raise my children where I want. I ain't listening. And then when they go bad, Pastor, come pray for my child. Or pray that he don't go to jail. But we pick and choose. And you know where we get that from? From within us. We don't like nobody to tell us what to do until it go bad. Then help tell me what to do. And these people, when Jesus called them, he said, hearken, listen, because what I got to tell you is very important. When he said that, you make sure that you understand, because you see what he's telling them, he said, what I'm going to tell you is going to be life changing. This is something I want to tell you that I need you to make a decision and write it down and keep it. And like we always say, pin it on your refrigerator. This is something I want you not to forget. And look what he says to them in verse 15. There is nothing from without a man that entereth into him that can defile him. But the things which come out of him, those are the things which defile a man. They were stuck on customs. That's why the scribe came with washing your hand. And customs can mess you up. Matthew Henry says this about custom. I wrote this down. He said, customs, whether good or corrupt, are best cured by rectifying corrupt notions. I said, now what is that? Corrupt custom. I said, what custom we have? Christmas, Easter, and Mother's Day. That's a custom. We custom it, we come to church, and most of those Sundays, especially if Christmas and Easter fall on a Sunday, we sharp as a tack and ready to stick. We come in with it. It's a custom. It's a custom that if you want to see especially the little kids dressed up, they're going to have all them little ruffles and everything. It's a custom. We dress them up and get their hair, and the poor kids look like they'd be suffering to me, but that's because you don't want them to move. You don't want them to do nothing. Don't mess it up. It's a custom. And the custom, but what about the corrupt notion? The notion is that if I come to church for Christmas, for Easter, for Mother's Day, I'm under the notion that me and God are all right. So now I got I done corrupted a custom. I got a corrupt notion, all because my motive was wrong. And when I read that, I said, oh yeah, I can see that now. I can see where Matthew, corrupt custom are best cured by rectifying the correct notion. You got to tell them you can wear, what's them, Giovanni suits for Easter, but if you don't know Jesus, you're still lost. You can put all the fine clothes on. If you haven't given your life to Christ, guess what? You're not saved. And we have the notion, just like these people, that if I come to church, I'm all right. But if you're not obeying the word, it ain't doing you no good. So what Jesus is saying, he said, I gotta open the eyes to some things. Look what he says in verse 16. If any man have ears to hear, let him hear. Now we know none of them boys wasn't walking around without no ears. That would look fun. You got a whole group of people. He said, well, if any of y'all got it, some ears. But he's saying, listen, if your mind is right, if your heart is right, if you want to make a difference, if you want what I'm telling you to start governing your life, to set you on the right path, I need you to hear this. Take heed to what I'm saying. We do it all the time. We do it with our kids when they're coming up. You listening to me? You better be listening, because I ain't going to tell you this again. Why? We telling them, take it. This is going to change your life. It's going to change something if you don't do it. So we want you to what? Take heed. Listen. But kids kind of, we all been kids. We kind of brush that up. Yeah. Until something happened. And when you see that look in our parents' eye, and your eyes start watering up, because you know what? They mean business. We done messed up. I didn't take heed to what they told me to take heed to. The enemy or the enemy. And Jesus is setting the stage for me. He's fixing up. Verse 17, he says this. This one stopped me a little while. He said, and when he was entered into the house from the people, his disciple asked him concerning the parable. Now, when I read that, I didn't find that to be no parable. It looked kind of plain to me. It's not what you take in. It's not if you got some problem, you're not going to be defiled spiritually because you eat pork meat. You're not going to be defiled if you go and spend your $20 on a pound of crackling. You're not going to defile you. You're going to be low on money, but it won't defile you. And the thing is, I was wondering, why did they find that hard to understand? Because they was used to customs. You see, and you see, my wife, she helped me with these things. And when I tell her, I wait till the last minute, because she liked to read everything about it. And if she started reading, guess what? I got to listen. So I waited till yesterday, and I said, well, what you think about enemy, and what you think about, the custom? And she hit that little tablet and started putting, and then she started reading. And the thing about it would help me with these disciples is, I said, they should have got that, but they were stuck on custom. The Jewish custom was this, that if you touch something that was unclean, it made you unclean. If you touched pork, you was unclean. If you touched a Gentile, if you touched a Gentile who had touched a Gentile, you was unclean. You touch anything dead, you was unclean. If you touch your wife after she had a child, before it was time, you was unclean. But the opposite, they took that notion and said, oh, so if I don't touch them, I'm clean. Everything in me is pure. And that's how they looked at it. And even the disciples being Jewish say, well, okay, how am I going to be defiled if I didn't touch all these things. I'm okay with God. The easy way, and it goes back to works. I work hard not to touch nobody that was defiled, and now Jesus is telling me that defilement don't come from what you touch. Now, you mean all these years, we've been avoiding touching Gentiles, touching pork, and touching people, and you telling me now that I've done all that for nothing? Jesus was trying to get them to transition, like Pastor been teaching us from Hebrew, from the old law to the new law. He was setting the stage for me. See, this is the way it's going to be. But now, the thing, we know that God never changes. And the same way he was in Genesis, he's going to be the same way now. So now when he tells them this, the disciples come in and verse 18, and he said unto them, "Are ye without understanding? Do you not perceive that whatsoever things from without entered into a man cannot defile him?" On the spiritual level, whatever goes from the outside is not going to defile you. He says, because it entered not into his heart. Now we get into it. What you eat don't go in your heart. Now, he's not talking about the physical, because you eat all that pork meat, it's going to block your arteries. I'm going to tell you now. It's going to lock that your physical heart up. But he says it's not going to contaminate you spiritually. It's not going to defile you. It's not going to make you act a certain way. Some of the brothers in there, remember that old song used to come out, "I did this, it was just because the dog in me"? That was true. That's why you acted like that. Because it was the dog in you. And it wasn't that you had touched the dog or you ate a dog, but in your heart you wanted to act like one. And you see, we don't like those kind of things. We don't like to put the blame on us, so we say, it's the enemy. Well, you know, Satan had me, you know, just acting a fool out there. Nah. And we hear it in church, pastor done said, I heard many people, well, Satan is not omnipresent. He can't be everywhere. Now, you read in the news, he's cutting up in Chicago, but he at your house too. Oh, yeah, that's Satan causing me. No, we don't like to admit that some of the things we do, it starts on the inside. And that's what our problem is. Look what he said. He says, because it goes into the belly and comes out to in the drought. Now, you got to think about, like I say, Jesus was the same, and I didn't give Brother Brent all of the verses, because y'all got a Bible. Y'all can read and flip. Y'all can flip your Bible and go to wherever you're. Genesis 6 and 5. So I didn't give it to him. I'm going to try to hurry up and get it to him before they can get it on the screen so y'all can look. Genesis verse 6 and 5. Look what it says. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Way back in Genesis, he said, you know what the problem is? Now, you see, you read that, you didn't see where he put Satan in parentheses, the devil. He said their hearts was evil. And I said, man, we in bad shape. But it gets worse if you don't open up and let Jesus make a difference in you. We can read all these things about how we act and how we conduct ourselves, but you know what? If you don't make a decision, a conscious decision, to say, you know what, I want to be better, I want to live better, I want to see my kids do better, and kids are no different from us. You look at your kids. Let me see what they were saying when we was kids. Girls are sugar and spice and everything nice, and boys are snails and tails and puppy dog tails. They got some pretty rough sisters out there. But we get that concept and that notion out here, oh, they're so nice and sweet. No, not all of them, not all of them. My wife is now, but not, oh man. We can get ourselves in some bad situation by, and not, this not, no, but just the thought come. When I was coming up, we was younger, it was a song where a guy, I can't think of who sung the song, it's a thin line between love and hate. And that brother did all he could dirt to that woman. And then one day, she had enough. And his song changed that he said that. He said I was that close to being dead. And the thing is, we never know what's in a person's heart. We don't know what's in our own heart. We make this thing, oh, I'd never do this, or I'd never say that. You ain't never got in a tight spot yet. You ain't never been in that position where you're going to say it's life or death. And it's hard to get us to do things that's good from our heart, but it's easy. Most of us had kids in here. You know how difficult it was to teach that child an Our Father prayer? You go over it and over it and over again. Then, Our Father. No, Father. They couldn't remember. You couldn't get them. Why don't you? Trying to get them to say, look, I want you to pray every night. You going to say your prayer? You say your prayer? Uh-huh. Wait a minute. Why was it so difficult to get them to pray, tell the truth? Did you do that? Uh-uh. A lie come out just like that. Because it's on the inside. We never want to look at our children. Oh, they're so sweet and they're so kind. Yeah, catch them when you don't think you're looking. You're going to see. And we the same thing with God. When we think God not looking, we do all kind of stuff. Say all kind of things. Act all kind of ways. Because you know what? We think he not looking. We think we undercover. Let's keep talking about this heart. Jeremiah 17, 9 through 10. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? You see that word desperately? It's as if our heart looked for stuff to be wicked about. When you're desperate about something, don't you go after it? And Jeremiah said, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Our heart, the thing in here where we're supposed to have love and understanding. What about Proverbs 4 and 23? Most of us probably know that one. Proverbs 4, keep that heart, thine heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. How many of us then let some issues come out of our heart that we wish we hadn't let out? Those of us who married, we can raise our hand because we done said something. You know, we had it in our heart, but we say, I'm gonna keep it. I'm not gonna let this issue out because you know I'm gonna hold it. And that spouse says something else. And you're fighting not to see it, but then that other verse come in, but that is desperately wicked. And that desperately wicked part come out, and you want to say something about them and their mama and everything. Why? You've been had that in there, but now that issue comes out. And you wish you hadn't said it, but it didn't come out. And most of us do you ever watch Fred Sanford, Woody? And when Woody and Esther, he said, yeah, that old serpent tricked us, yeah, make us fight each other. No, that's that liquor bottle got you, Woody. And that's why you said it. And it was the same thing with us. When our temper flared, our feelings got hurt, we thought they had the best of us. We say, well, I got one little punch I'm going to throw, and I'm going to throw it. Because you know why? The heart, is it got issues in it, and it's deceitful. It's so deceitful, it'll fool you. It'll make you say how much you love and care, and it's true. But if that one thing come in, we do that 180 and start talking about, I never did care, I never did like. And you're married, you're stuck, you know you're not going nowhere, but you done said it. Because you know the heart, our heart is we have emotions in there. And you get mad and say things, and that's why the Bible tells you, be angry but sin not, but we kind of miss that sin not part. But the Lord said, be angry and sin not. I'm just flesh. It comes out, And that's the thing we do. But Jesus is stressing this to him. He's saying, now I want you to know it's coming from your heart. I want to know, let you know it's coming out. Now, look at verse 20. He said, and he said, that which cometh out of the man, that defileth him. So you mean if we can just keep our mouth quiet, we'd be all right. You remember when those who've been in church a while, you remember when Isaiah got called by God? He said, I'm a man of unclean lips. And I live among people who are unclean. You know why he said lips? Because if he could have kept his lips closed, what was in his heart never would have came out. The Bible tells us what? Put a guard on your mouth. Put a guard on your heart. Don't let those things come out. If we could put a filter on it and say, get a vision of, Lord, how this going to look after I say it and play it in our mind, we wouldn't say it. Because you see, this going to cause too much trouble. 2 weeks of not talking, getting up fixing your own food, and it's not worth it. But we don't see that. All we see is, I'm going to get even, or I'm going to do them what they did me, and then we suffer. But when he comes to it, and I had a vision of him, I said, well, now, God is, he finna get to the point here. So the thing is, I said, when we look in the mirror, what do we see? Make sure I'm dressed right, my collar not up, my tie straight. The ladies want to make sure they got their makeup on, their earrings match. They got their wig straight. We don't have none of them little seeds in our eye. We check the mirror for all kind of things. But when you look in the mirror, do you ever see your attitude? We never look in the mirror and say, let me see how my attitude gonna be today when I go to church. What if somebody's sitting where I normally sit at? How would I respond? We never look in that mirror. You know why? Because if we look in that mirror, it's gonna tell us about ourselves. It's gonna tell us about our ways and our actions. It's gonna tell us about how we conduct ourselves. If we had a spiritual mirror that's gonna tell us, now Lord, I'm going to church. Let me see my heart before I go. Let me see what kind of things I've hidden, I got in my heart that I need to release before I go, because I don't want nothing to block me from understanding and hearing the word. But sometimes we mad for all kind of reasons. And when you get to church, your mouth ball up like you got two popcorn balls in there. How you doing? It's the heart. Lord, how we gonna fix our heart? You know what Paul said? Paul said, "What? I'm the chiefest of sinners." He looked at us and he said, "I'm the worst there is." But when we look at in the mirror, do we say, "I'm all right"? Because I know how they act. They a whole lot worse than me. And that's from our heart. Let's look at what he was saying here. Like I said, we ain't gonna be long. We ain't gonna be 21 to 23. He said, "For within, for For from within, out of the heart, men proceeded evil thoughts. Now, we ain't gonna raise our hand. I'm gonna put my hand in my pocket. How many of us have had evil thoughts? And the amazing thing, them evil thoughts can pop up, and you can be doing totally nothing. I mean, nothing at all that deal with it, and that evil thought pop up. And some of us practice or wait or prepare ourselves, I should say, for evil thought. Now. When I was going to school, I went it was USL when I went, now it's UL. But I went there for 1 year because I got in trouble. 1 year was all I could do and I had to go. Not that kind of trouble, but, well, you see, I wasn't studying because I was doing like everybody else. And some of the men especially gonna know what I'm talking about. We'd go to the student center and, They was having dances and stuff, and we'd make sure we stand against the wall. Why are we gonna stand against the wall? They ain't gonna fall. But you see, we had to see everything that passed. So we stood against the wall, and you know, that's what we do. Where if you see somebody you want to dance, and then. And you weren't dancing fast, jumping, sweating. No, I ain't getting off. We weren't, because you know what? Our thoughts were evil. We thought we was having a good time, but our thoughts were evil. So now, even in church, no, that don't happen in church. But security, if y'all see some guy just standing up on the wall, just looking, go tell him something. Y'all laughing, but security? Y'all go tell, because your thoughts are evil. If you just want to hang on the wall, where you go? I'm just hanging on. No. Security, go tell them, y'all need to go in church. Your thoughts are evil. And you know, if you look in Matthew, he goes through all these verses, and we're going to come to them, but in Matthew 5, for out of the heart proceeded evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornication, theft, false witness, and blasphemy. But when you look in Mark has 7 that's not listed in Matthew. When you look at Mark 20:21-22, there's 7 of them that's in there that's not mentioned in Matthew. Like I say, Mark was a little more aggressive. He didn't want to leave some things out. He talked about the thoughts, and we got to deal with a word called hatred. Y'all know what hate is? And I want you to remember this for a reason. It says hate describes an emotional response, an attitude toward persons or things. The hated thing is decisively rejected, it is detested, and the individual wants no contact or relationship with it. That's something that's hated. Jesus came and told us, you know, we was going with our enemies, and he went just the opposite. He said, you got to love your enemy. Pray for those who despitefully use you. And when you look at an enemy is somebody that just don't like you. They would do you harm if they had a chance. But then he tells us to love them and not hate them. There's a song we used to sing in the other church. It says, I hate the sin that made thee mourn and drove thee from my breath. I hate it. I hate the sin. We have to ask ourselves, if I hate sin, then I reject it, I detest it, and I don't want to have nothing, no contact or relationship with it. Then we have to ask ourselves, why do we keep doing it? Do we hate it as much as we say we do? When he listed those sins. And I'm gonna mention the seven that he didn't put in there in Matthew. Covetousness, wickedness, deceit. Now deceit is a strange word. Because you see, deceit says, it's just like wickedness, but deceit says, I cover it up so that the pain, hurt, or injury can be more effective on the person I don't like. That's deceit. We wouldn't want to say I've been deceitful, but, and I'm gonna say, some of us as men, just talking about men in general, when you know you're not gonna marry that girl, but you still tell her you love her, you meet her, you go here, and when you, oh, we're gonna go out, you're gonna take care of that, our babe, yeah? She paid for it. You do what you want and get what you want, and then see you. That's deceit. That's deceit. That's like when a hunter trying to trap a bear, and you know how they open them big bear traps up, and then they just cover it with leaves, and then they put the bait for the bear to go get. And then he comes and he walks in the trap, and he clamps on his leg, digs in. And when you're deceitful, that's what you're doing. You don't want to just hurt the person. You want to disguise it as if you love them so the pain can be greater. But we don't want to say that's us, because then I have to say that coming out of my heart. And we don't want nobody to know that I am or I have deceitful thoughts. But whenever you plan, and that's why the Bible in the New Testament with the enemy, God said, vengeance is mine. It's mine, it's not yours. Because the thing about hatred is, once we get it, once it manifests like that, it's hard for us to let it go. And God saw that. That's why he said in Genesis that the heart is toward wickedly continuously. Because hatred is something that is a response that we have, when love is a choice that we make. We respond in hatred because somebody did something we didn't like. So we do whatever we can to get back at them. It's just a response. But love is a choice. And we don't see the pain and hurt that we have in that. But deceitful is one of those things that's planned out just so I can see the pain that you go through. Then we got lasciviousness. That's another one. Evil eye. Now, that's a strange word, an evil eye. Somebody give you, now I can't close one eye and keep one open and look. I can't do all of that. I don't, but an evil eye is not that. It's an envious look. I can't think of the word now. Predicated, that's it. On covetousness or strife. You look at a person, and some of y'all probably don't know somebody. I know none of y'all don't do it. But you look at a person, they walk by, and you look at them like they smell. Yeah. Give them that look, and you turn you. That's an evil eye. And God says, that's come out of your heart. We say they done us something, or they walking like they all of that, so you look at them like that. But that's in your heart. So now, when you look at all those things, the seven that we got, pride, foolishness, those are the seven that's not listed in Matthew. But now, when you look at those things, you got to say, well, now, if I got all that in my heart, what else can be in there? If that's in there, how did all that get in there? Well, when Adam fell and sin entered to it, that was planted in there. Just like when you get saved, the fruit of the Spirit come in your life, and you have that in there. But like the dog fighter said, whichever one you feed, that's the one that's going to win. We come to church, no Bible, no pen, and we don't want no CD when we leave. But we expect we're going to grow and be strong and be able to fight against something that's already in our heart, and we don't know how to get it out. So that posed a question to us, and we're going to do this, we're going to be finished. How do we get this out of our heart? How do we get this conglomerate of evilness and sin out of our heart? Okay, let's look. I see Minister Duck right there. I'm gonna use Minister Duck because his wife right sitting right next to him. He ever done anything? I know he's a good person. He's kind. He's generous. But has he ever done any small thing and realized it and said, "I'm sorry"? He said he was sorry, and you accepted it, being the night you forgave him. But later on, 2 days, a week, a month, he done the same thing. And he said he was sorry. And then you're going, it's coming. If he was sorry the first time, why did he do it a second time? Now, sorry covered it. Because that's all he could say. Look, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do it. But then it happened again. And you know why? Because it was in his heart. And we say things, we do things, and we don't mean to, and we say we're sorry, but until we can get it out of our heart, it's going to keep coming up again. So that's the thing we got to do. We got to know how to get it out of our heart. And we read, we study. But now, to fix this problem, we got to go to a man that had some great problems. And that's David. David had some problems. But David also had a remedy for him. In Psalms, in 51st Psalm, we know the 51st Psalm. We know a 51st Psalm. We're going to go there. Because we got to fix what's broken. We got to learn how to get out what's in it. And no, we're not going to do all of it, but we got some verses we got to pick out of it. First of all, we're going to look at a godless sorrow for his sin. You see, how he opened up, "Oh God, have mercy on me. Oh God, according to thy loving kindness, according to thy multitude and tender mercies, blot out my transgression." He first of all magnifies God. And look at the words he used. He didn't use God because of your strength or your power. He said because of your mercy. That shows me that David recognized that he had sinned. But David didn't do it on his own. David didn't get there by himself. David had done his sin with Bathsheba, and he had had Uriah killed, and David was living all right. Because you know why? He justified it. David said, "Well, look, I done this, but I'm going to fix it. I'm going to marry Bathsheba, I'm going to take care of her. She's going to be in the palace." That covers it in David's eyes. And he was comfortable with it till Nathan came to him and gave him that little parable. And when he saw that, he said, "That no good rascal did." What? He said, "Who is it? Because we're going to kill him." He said, "That's you." Wait a minute, that's me? David didn't know what was in his heart. But when he found out, he knew how to get it out. And that's what we have to we make mistakes, especially those of us who married and in relationships, we're going to make some mistakes. And the bad thing about sorry don't cover it. It fix it with the person, with the individual. But with God, it's still there, because he said, you know what? It's in your heart. And until we decide, say, "Lord, I got to get this out of my heart." Look what he said. He gave the verbal confession. Look at, "I acknowledge Verse 2. For wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. He ain't saying nothing about wash my shoulder blade. This is on the inside. It's on the inside. And if you don't wash the inside, you can clean the outside all you want. You can buy flowers and give a candy. And if you're able, get a car. But sooner or later, that sin that's in you is going to come right back out. And how many cars you going to be buying? How many times you going to go to the flower shop? How many times you going to accept it and come with the... And David tells us in that verse too, God don't want no sacrifice. He wants our heart. He wants our heart. He wanted clean. Look what he says in verse 4. He said, against thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight. And if you ask me, I say that was against Uriah. Uriah took the brunt of it. But the sin was against God. God could raise Uriah up if he wanted to. But was in David's heart to kill? That had to be washed out. And David knew how to do it. He knew how to get down and say, you know what? This is in me. And we got to look at ourselves and say, you know what? The way I look at people, that's got to be in my heart. The way I talk to people, that's got to be in my heart. My attitude toward people, the pride I have, that's got to be in my heart. And if I don't come to God low and humble, if I don't come to God admitting that it's me that sinned, it's me that's broken in our marriage and not the other person, guess what? We'll never get it fixed. We keep going around the same thing. We keep doing the same thing. Why is that? Because it's in your heart. No matter how many nights, I cried over that, and I think I'm over it now, you're going to cry again. Because if you don't get it out your heart, sooner or later, somebody's going to push that button, and it's going to come out again. And you're going to be back in the same place. But when it's out, look what he said. Behold, what the Lord does, he desired truth in the inward parts. And it's inside. He said, he telling us where it is. God said, your problem is in your heart. Jesus is telling them, you know what? The issues is coming out of your heart. So why do you want to do physical outside things to fix an inside problem? Why are you going to call a plumber because your electricity off? You got a bricklayer and a painter at your house and you don't have no electricity. Fix that electricity. And they wondering what's wrong with you. And people in relationship wondering the same thing. What's wrong with them? I tell them, I need their time. I want to spend time with them. I need to talk with them. And they buying me things. They giving me excuses when I want to be with them. God is the same way. God said, I need my time with you. When we going to fellowship? When will I going to have an opportunity to tell you how much I adore you? Lord, I got to get to work. Just give me some strength, Lord, so I don't faint on the job. And he's wondering about our time, the inner time, the time that matters most. Most of us, we can think of all the gifts we gave people, our wives, our spouse. But you know the thing that they're going to remember most is the time we spent laughing, having fun. And God wants the same thing. How many times that you and God just worship together? But you can't come with unclean hands. You can't come with a corrupt heart. You can't come with envy and strife and all the things we listed here. Look what he said in verse 7. He said, purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be white as snow. Make me to hear the joy and gladness that the bones which thou hast broken may rejoice. You see how he said that? Bones is on the inside. He said, Lord, you've broken me on the inside. because I realize I have sinned. How many of us sin and realize that what we've done and really are broken about it? Now, I'm not talking about broken because you got caught. That's a whole different thing. You know, you doing stuff on your phone and then the wife say, "Let me see what you're doing." You know, "Baby, I'm sorry. That's not brokenness. You caught." Brokenness is when nobody else know it but you and God. And you say, "You know what? I'm like David. Lord, I done messed this up. Before I go to my spouse or my friend or whoever I injured, I'm going to come to you and say, forgive me because this is painful to me on the inside." Now, everybody don't feel that. If you're not saved, you don't feel that. You mean what? You know, better them than me. And you go on with life. But when you are saved, guess what? You look at things differently. Look what he said. "Hide thy face from my sin and blot out mine iniquity. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me." This what I got ain't going to work. This heart I have, I need a clean heart, a right spirit. And we come with contact with people, and they don't have to tell us nothing. But we can look at them, and we get that feeling and something just ain't right about them. They talking good. They sound okay. But their spirit never connects with yours. And you learn to keep your distance because they don't have the right spirit. And it's no different with God. When God knows your spirit not right, what he said in Isaiah 59 and 1, "The Lord's hand is not short that he cannot reach, but it's your iniquities that have separated between you and God." It's the same thing. God want to be as close to you as you want him to be. He want to live within you every day if you want him to. But he's not going to live with you and your junk. He's not going to live with you and your... We wouldn't do it either. How many spouses in here, their husbands say, "Look, I want my old football helmet and cleats, and I'm going to put him in the bed with it." You're going to be sleeping in there with by yourself. We're not gonna stay with that kind of stuff. Old sweaty uniform, or I don't want to wash it because it might fall. It ain't coming in here. Why? Because it's unclean. And we got to understand that the clean things we cling to, or we should cling to, because we push some things aside that are good because, you know, we're not ready to let go what's in our heart. It's going to always come back to, look what he says in verse 13, he said, "Then will I teach transgressors thy way." After God restores him and make him better, he said, "I'm not going to keep it to, I'm going to teach him thy way." And that's what he's actually doing now. Thousands of years later, David is teaching us, we are transgressed. We've sinned. We've come short. We missed the mark. We messed up with God. And he said, "Let me teach them your ways." Look at verse 14. "Deliver from me the blood guilt. I'm not guilty no more." 16. "For thou desirest not sacrifices, else would I give it. Thou delightest not in burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are what? A broken spirit and a broken and contrite heart, O God, thou wilt not despise." When God see you serious, when he see that you want to not cover up the action you did, but you want to get to the source of why you did it. When we went to D.C., we drove, and one thing Mr. Dwight would always say, we kept while we talk, he said, "You know what? Sometimes I don't mind the things that go wrong in my life or what people do or say. But," he said, "I sure would like to know the motive." Because, you see, if we know the motive, I can fix something, Jonathan. If I know you mad at me for a reason. But why? Because. Because not a reason. What's the motive? What's the motive? Have I done something? And David said, I realize now what I've done. And you see, I want to fix this. So I want God to fix me and get me back to where I should be. We can live a life, it'll never be free of decisions to be made, some pleasant, some unpleasant. We're not going to ever live and not hurt or wound somebody. But it's the difference between me hurting you for lack of knowledge and hurting you because my heart is not right. It's easy to forgive a loved one, a spouse, when you know that what they say, they really didn't mean it. Because their heart, it didn't come from their heart. But when you feel like they're against you from the inside, it's a hard thing. And I think that's why when the Bible is adultery and fornication, you know, because it's hard for us to see. We can easily see that fornication, that adultery, that came from the heart. But what we don't see is when I'm trying to get you to do what I want you to do so I can look good, it's pride, and that's coming from the heart. Pride is and lust is a strange thing. James says that we do things because we lust after them. We act the way we do because we lust after them. And you know, we think lust as, you know, physical stuff, but we can lust after wanting, and I use marriage a lot, our spouse to be like somebody else. They're not that person. They don't walk the same. They don't talk the same. They don't think the same. But you see something in that person, whether it be Pastor Omar or Deacon Hill, and you say, why don't you dress like Deacon Hill? And he's saying, I don't want to dress like Deacon Hill. But you in your mind admire the way that he dressed, so you try to force your spouse to be like that. Same thing with men. Oh, why don't you do like her? Why don't you do it? You trying to put something on. Why is that? What is your motive for that? What's your motive for Pastor Omar? We don't need five Pastor Omars. God made one. We don't need five brothers just like, I can't think of his name now that I'm talked about. Brother Verna. We don't need five of them. You don't need all. Why we want to look like we just come all out the same magazine, a robot, everybody wearing the same thing, doing the same thing. But you know what we can do? We can love the same. That would look a lot better, wouldn't it? Whether than all of us dressed alike and walking alike, talking alike, saying the same. Well, I know what he's going to say because Parker say it all the time. He's going to say it all the time. Carl going to say it. And that would get boring. But if we could love like God has required us to love, that never gets boring. Because you know what? Love is alive. Hatred is a thing that kills. All the things that listed in there that's unclean, they destroy things. Love is something that grows things. And guess what? As something grows, it gets bigger, it gets wiser, it gets, as we get more loving, more kind. And when you look at somebody, even your spouse, when you first met them, how we acted, and you can look at them and say, wow, they've grown. They've gotten better. Because you know what? They've gotten rid of some of those things that's unclean. And if we have the patience, I got to put that in there, the patience to say, you know what? I'm going to pray with them, not on them, I'm going to pray with them that God can work those unclean things out of us. That would be a prayer for tonight, that we get down and say, you know what? Couples would pray, well, we're going to pray, Lord, if there be any unclean thing in me, in my spouse, show it to us so we can remove it. Not that we can point yours is worse than mine, but that I can be clean. And what? Then I can do like David. I can show transgressors your ways. If you're not saved, if you don't believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, if you haven't given your life to him, you say, I don't see what the point in it. You don't look at it as being unclean. You look at it as being you. But Christ has shed his blood to do that very same thing, to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. All unrighteousness. So it's not a hard thing to get it out. It's not complicated. He said, if you would allow me to come in, he'd wash us. And that was a song we used to sing. Oh, man, if I could sing, I'd be singing it to y'all. But Carlos, you don't have to worry about that because I don't sing that. But the song says, it says, wash me over again. Wash me over again in your precious blood. Because you know what? We realize that if I can get washed today for lying, and then I can get washed for evil thoughts. You notice that was the first one on both lists? Evil thoughts. Lord, if you can get those evil thoughts out of my mind, if you can cleanse me and make me whole, I can look at people different. I won't hate because Christ says that I should love. And I realize they despitefully use. That's a tough thing to know that somebody used you. You was giving your best, your life, your heart, your money, whatever it was, and then to find out that they use you. It make you feel a strange kind of way. But Lord, wash me over in your blood. That I won't have no malice toward them. I won't have no envy. I won't put walls up that others can't cross over because I was injured 10, 12 years ago. But Lord, I need you. And that's our prayer. Lord, if you wash me in your precious blood, I can be clean. We think about the things we've said, what we've done, the way we acted, and say, Lord, wash me over. I confess, Lord, that I'm a sinner. I confess that I've done wrong, but I realize now that it's you that died on the cross for me. And it's a strange thing. We wouldn't take a drink at a hotel, at a restaurant. Somebody said, well, look, it's a bug in there. And he come and pull it out and say, nah, it's clean. We don't want that because we know what it was. God know who we was, sinners and defiled, bugs in us. He said, if you take the bugs out, I still love you. Because I love you when you had them in you. And we got to say, Lord, wash me over again in your precious blood. That blood he shed was innocent. And Lord, I realized that. And I realized that you never sinned. You never did anything wrong, but you died and bled so I can be washed. And if I was one that didn't know Jesus, I'd say that, Lord, wash me, make me whole, make me complete. And I would confess him that he was Lord, he Savior. And I wouldn't stop there. I'd say, Lord, if you needed somebody, use me. I'm not the best, far from it. I haven't said the right things all the time, far from that. But if you wash me in your blood, I know that I would be righteous. Because they wouldn't see me. They wouldn't know the old Sam. I ain't going to say my nickname. But they wouldn't see me. They would see him. And when they say, I can see that a change has come. I can see that God did something over you. How did you get it? I admitted that I was a sinner. I confessed that he was Lord. And I asked him to wash me over in his precious blood. And if there's anybody in here that's not saved, that's all you have to do. Lord, wash me over again. Wash me over again in your precious blood. You didn't die for nothing, but for me. And I'm grateful. I'm thankful. Like David, I'm after your heart now, Lord. I'm after your heart right now, Lord. Wash me over again in your precious blood. We're going to stand and be dismissed. And I think Brother Carlo, I didn't know he knew that song, but he old school too. Me and him have to talk about that. It's a beautiful song to set and say, I messed up. And that's all God wants from any of us. He wants to say, you know what? Because he knows it already. We know that. He know that already. And he loves us anyway. No, I wouldn't take the drink after he pulled the bug out. I don't know if I'd eat at the restaurant again. But God said, you know what? I love you so much, I'll die in your place. And corrupt as you was, I'll still take you if you let me wash you over again. Lord, as we leave this place, we thank you for your word on this day, Lord. And we realize that it's a hard lesson, but we got to stop blaming Satan for everything and start looking on us, that we've fallen short, that there's something in our heart that needs to be cleansed and moved. But Lord, we came on this night and we accepted your word, and we're not going to pick and choose, Lord, but we're going to take it all. It might be medicine for our heart. It's bitter now, but it's going to be sweet in the end when you say, welcome home, thy good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things, and I'll make you rule over many. Lord, when we get to cast our crowns at your feet because you've done so much for us, we want to honor you and bless you. Lord, as we leave this place, but never your presence, thank you for your word. Thank you for your songs of praise. Thank you for coming into our life. Lord, as we leave, let us leave with love, compassion, and realizing that it was all about you and not about us. Protect us, lead us, guide us safely home. And we ask these things in Jesus' name.